nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
I want to give like a 5-minute review of where we were. Okay. And well, sometimes after you see a topic for, you stop talking about a topic for too long, then you just start forgetting about it. So I wanted to bring up the thin film problem, which actually brings us back to a discussion point during the presentations, which is, in the porous battery, we were discussing, I thought it was a very interesting discussion where when we have a battery made out of particles and we compared it against a thin film battery, where basically in this case you have a porous anode, a porous cathode, and a separator as compared to a thin film where you really have in a thin film you have only reaction here. And in comparison, here you have reaction basically on every single interfacial point. And there's a big difference because when a battery is reacting, let's just say it's recharging, then you can think of these interfaces, the ones that are closer to the counter electrode, the ones where the reaction is going to be carried out, is going to be carrying out the entire intercalation process, and the back is going to be basically just waiting for active material, for lithium to come back. Combine the same on this side. Right, you also have, if this is reacting in one direction, right, this one is reacting in the other one, right, but the activity is focusing on these particles that are the closest to the counter electrode. And while these, as these fill in, the center of all the action moves a little bit to the back, and this one moves to the back too. With that, you define what we arbitrarily stated as being the reaction zone. Okay, we'll come back to that eventually. We'll come back to a description where we actually can track explicitly things like the width of the reaction zone and the intensity of the reaction zone. To this point, all we've said is that there's some location in the cell called X of R. And, well, we have at some point acknowledged that there's a reaction zone for the cathode and a reaction zone for the anode. And depending on what the geometry is, we have derived that, right? And most of the description that occurred during the first half of the semester was focused on that. In a thin film, instead what you have is that all the reaction is occurring at the electrolyte active material interface. So there's really, instead of having a spread out zone, in this case, all the reaction is occurring right at the interface and right at the other interface. Okay? That's a big difference. And in this case, if you remember, right, what we proposed was that the voltage of the cell, right, was going to be the voltage of the cathode minus the voltage of the anode. Okay? Minus, in this case, the losses as a result for electrons traveling through the anode times the current, right? The losses that are from electrons traveling through the cathode, right? Plus the losses occurring across the reaction zone. And the losses in the separator. In fact, strictly speaking, the losses in the cathode and the losses in the anode, right? If in this case I'm talking about the reaction zone only occurring in one of the electrodes, right? I can set it up like this. But strictly speaking, right? Lithium ions are crossing here, entering the material that has been already reacting, right? At distance, in this case, a distance XR away, okay, or XRC away, okay, and the electrons instead are traveling through the back. So strictly speaking, this distance, which is what I'm accounting here, should really be right, because this, as one goes from 0 to x of r, the other one goes from h sub c in the other direction. Okay, and I can do the same if I had a reaction zone on that side, and then I would have to correct to replace that term with okay. And then I would have a full-blown reaction zone where I have two reaction zones moving, and I would still have, to, of course, to solve for the reaction zone for the anode and the reaction zone for the cathode. And if you remember, right, it has to do with the geometry of the system, right? How these particles are distributing in the electrode. Here, on the other hand, it's a very different issue because the reaction zone is pinned, right? The reaction zone is just the interface between the anode layer, right, the anode thin film, the cathode layer, and the separator. Okay, that's the big difference. Okay, and you can indeed bring a reaction zone model if your cathode is porous and you expect reaction, say, at the beginning occurring in one small area and starting to move from the back. Then, as one of the folks from Crane brought up, right, you could have material here, right, if you have an internal porosity, right, that will indeed induce that in the system. Okay? Now, when it's a fully solid electrode, what matters, okay, given what the reaction is here, is how material is diffusing through. And what we found, and again, just as a matter of reminder, we found that in the solid phase, we have mass flux occurring in the system, right, where in this case, the flux in the solid phase is, I'm sorry, I made a mistake there. That should be the concentration. That should be the diffusivity. Where the mass flux is minus the diffusivity times the gradient of concentration. Okay? And if the system, and just to remind you of the assumptions, if system is diffusion limited, what does it mean by diffusion limited? It means that if mass is being expelled from the anode into the electrolyte, it crosses the separator and attempts to enter the cathode, the reaction occurring at the interface is so fast that it's going to be limited on how easy it is actually to diffuse through. It's not going to be limited by the, you know, by the reaction at the interface, but by diffusion alone. Okay? Yes? Fourth and the fifth term. You mean this one?
Yeah.
And this one?
Yeah.
Ah, yes. I should have developed it more. So here what you have, and maybe I should have talked about here, this accounts for the electrons moving here through the back, okay, to the reaction zone position, okay? And these account for the lithium ions moving in this direction. So really, this contribution should really be the electronic conductivity, and really this one should be the ionic conductivity. Okay? So because here, in one case, you're limited by how fast lithium ions can get here, right? And, well, if you remember, right, we have a charge being extracted and a charge pulling back in, right? And outside the battery, all we get is electrons. Right? Inside, we have lithium ions and electrons coming through. So, strictly speaking, at the reaction zone, we have right? So they both have to come from two directions, right? Either they come from the separator, which if they do, then it's not a battery, right? Or they come through the back, right? Which is what you want, right? So you have to have those two losses. And strictly speaking, right, the losses across these layers are different, right? Because if I'm at the very beginning of the discharge, this point over here, any losses in the cathode is going to be because of the electrons coming through, right? If my cathode thickness is really, really thick, then I would see more losses than if it's, you know, a very thin battery, right? In that case, I can completely neglect it, right? And only care about the losses that from the particles that have already reacted and are coming through. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. So if the system is diffusion limited, then I can say that at that interface, okay, the charge that I'm extracting out and that I'm putting out here, or you can call it J2, I use I and J indistinctively, corresponds to the number of moles that are entering here, okay, that are entering in that section. So that corresponds really to J over CF. Okay? So I just use in this case, the related, the amount of charge that is being extracted into the system, right? Given that that reaction has to balance out, right? By that, for every electron I move from the system, I'm putting a lithium ion in, and they're all mediated through through Faraday's constant. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay? It's really just a unit conversion issue there, right? Because mass that you put out is electron that you put out corresponds to lithium ions dumped into the separator. Okay? Which, if the separator, as we have built it, right, we want it to have a high conductivity, right? I'm gonna make here the point. Or if you prefer a high diffusivity. If that is what you have, then whatever flux that you have here will be the same flux you will have at that other interface, right? So what we're saying is that at the interface, if this is the cathode material, you will have a constant flux N0, which is related to the current density as J over ZF. Okay? That's the relationship, right? And mass is coming through that side. And from there, we just started proposing, well, this just really becomes a simple problem because now I have here a flux boundary condition, okay? And typically a flux boundary condition is referred to as a Neumann boundary condition. And on this side, we don't have any mass coming through, right? That would be a leaky battery, right? Instead, what we have is, well, on this side, we only have electrons coming through. So in this side, there's no mass. Okay, so if at all, right, for my thin film, right, stuff is coming through, right? And if I have a low diffusivity, you will see a concentration accumulation in the interface that it's facing the electrolyte, okay? To a first approximation. If instead of a thin film, right, if instead of having a thin film of thickness H sub C, I have a particle, and we discussed that too, we have a particle just flowing in my cathode, right? If instead of having a spherical particles in my cathode, I have instead platelets, right, which we discussed as well, right, we have. Okay. If the aspect ratio of the particles is very large, then you should expect also that there's flux coming in both directions, right, of my platelet, right, and I will then have these gradients, right, that the lithium is wetting more the surfaces of the particles than the core of the particles, okay, and these have a thickness D. Right, put it here, D for the thickness. And what we found is that they both have mathematically the same solution. Okay, and I'm just going to skip that slide. And it corresponds to this one, right, which in this case, this is the solution for a platelet. And if you remember, I tried to convince you that the solution for a platelet, it's equivalent to the solution of a thin film, right? And just to show you, well, just walk you really fast over the solution, right? That's the concentration across the entire thickness, right? You can see X is the position, right? Where X is set to be, in this case, zero, right? In this case, right in the middle, right? And you can see that stuff is coming through the left. This is the mass flux, and you can see it's related to the current in that way. Right, D is the diffusivity, H sub C is the thickness of the platelet, okay, and my laser pointer is dying, so I'm just going to use here the actual mouse, and you can see that I'm only showing half of this, and that's why in this case the pink block, okay, and T is time, and you can see it, strictly speaking, should be an infinite sum, but as you expect, right, as time increases, then you expect that you get more accumulation and there's further penetration inside the film or the platelet. Okay? How does that relate to how do both solutions relate? If I have a thickness H sub C in my thin film, and actually I should have used a different H sub C. This is the H sub C, let's call this one H sub C of the film. Okay, that's this full solution for a platelet. And I should say then that HC of the film then is going to be HC of the platelet, which is what you have up there, except that this one should really be, let's see, twice, because I'm only looking at half of it. Yeah, that should be the platelet, so that should be half. Right, so basically I should double it, right, if I'm looking at a thin film, right? And you can apply the same solution, right? And now the trick is, how do I marry, right, how do I incorporate these results, this solution, and try to generate a much more sophisticated reaction zone model that actually includes diffusion in it, okay? For those of you doing the thin film project, that's a critical thing, right? Because now, as you have already found out, the voltage of the battery of both the cathode and the anode is a function of concentration. Okay? And, well, you still have those ohmic losses. Those are still there. You still have to incorporate them into your description. Okay? There's still thickness effects, right? And, would you have reaction zone effects if it's a thin film? No, right? Because in this case, all the reaction is localized at this one interface. Okay? So, we would have to modify this concept, right? You would have to go back to the actual basic concept of the losses, right? And incorporate all the individual contributions. Okay? And that's what I want to discuss next. And I'm gonna do it in this bit, so I'm gonna erase this. I'm gonna keep that equation over there as a point of comparison. Okay, so that I can do my thin film. Then I erase this one, I don't need it anymore. We might come back to that one. Okay, now, what I'm going to do here, I'm going to erase this bit, because now I want to keep that solution up there, but I want to adapt this idea and that solution, put them together. Okay, so here I'm going to make my sketch of my battery. Now my thin film battery, my full thin film battery, where I can account for the diffusion losses. I still have to account for the interfacial reaction losses because batteries are not always, especially thin film batteries, aren't always necessarily diffusion limited. Sometimes they are reaction limited, and that will be the next topic that we will discuss. Okay, but, here you have the anode, and just to describe it more accurately, here we have the current coming out, the current coming in, okay, this is electronic currents, okay, which will force losses in the systems, okay, here you will have a mass flux N naught, right, given what these J naughts are. This is the mass that is coming out during the discharge, which should be the same mass coming in into the cathode during the discharge. Okay? Okay. Now, as mass is taken out, qualitatively you should expect on your model, right, that if I start from an initial concentration, let's just call this C naught, right, as time passes, I should expect that I will have also a section where lithium is basically being replaced, right? Taken out of the system, right? Something like that. Okay? And how fast is mass being removed from that interface? It's going to be removed at the rate at which I'm extracting current. But you expect that if I extract current at a very, very slow rate, I should expect this one, instead of coming down like that so steep, it'll start just coming down really, really slowly, right? Like emptying a glass of milk, right? Really, really slow, right? And here on this side, because I'm pumping lithium into the electrolyte, and on this side, I am pumping lithium out from the electrolyte into the particle. If I start from this initial concentration down here, okay, if I put in some lithium, then you would expect that gradient is going to go up, right? Because now, as compared to before, where we're not including these losses, right now, actually, I am indeed having a material that actually accumulates very close to the surface, right? It takes time for that lithium to get inside the film, right? And you should expect that at some point, if my film is very, very thick, right, it's a thick film instead of a thin film, right, then I should find these losses to be very relevant, okay? What happens in between, since there's a constant flux being pumped into the separator and a constant flux being pumped from the separator into the cathode, I should expect that there should be a gradient in between. If the separator, of course, has a high diffusivity compared to the particles, then I should expect this gradient to be flat, okay, to be basically linear, that actually the separator reaches steady state in comparison to the anode or the cathode. If it's a separator that has a low conductivity, a low ionic diffusivity, then you will have, of course, something, a combination of both, right, where you would have lithium pileup on this side and lithium depletion on this side and some intermediate state in between, right? But in this case, you want that gradient to be also controlled, because on this side, during discharge, you can have salt precipitation here, and if this number over here at that side of the interface depletes to zero, then the reaction stops. Okay, do you see that? Because think about it, right here I'm putting lithium ions here to react, and if the concentration right outside the separator drops to zero, there's nothing to react, and then the battery should stop working, right? You should expect that nothing will happen after that. Right? Do you see that? Okay. Okay. So, that's qualitatively what we do, right? And how do we adapt that model over here? Well, the solution that you'll see over there applies to this part of the solution. Okay? And that solution that you see over there also applies to this part of the electrode as well. I would have to solve, and you have the solution there, right? You would have to just type it into an analytical description right here and here, and all you will have to do is track what happens at that interface and at that interface, right? That's really all you're trying to do here. Okay? Does that make sense at this point? Okay. Okay, so, the trick is, how do I incorporate that solution into my voltage description? You should expect that the voltage of the cell should be the voltage in the cathode. Right? You remember, right, that the voltage of the cathode is the equilibrium potential, is something that has these wiggles in between, okay, which goes, in this case, from zero to Cmax, where Cmax is typically the solubility limit. Okay, so really this should be a function of C. What C is that? What concentration? Just thinking of the cathode alone. Again, noticing that the concentration in my cathode, I have one value back here and one value back here. What is the concentration? What is the voltage that we care about? Because see, this potential, the equilibrium potential as a function of concentration, was measured assuming no voltage gradients. Okay? assuming no concentration gradients also. Basically, this was measured at a C rate, right, at a discharge rate, so low, it was done so slowly that, let's just say, they turn on the battery to be discharged, and they come back like a day or 2 days later, and they will get a nice plot. Okay, yes? Uh-huh. Because
that'd be your higher voltage.
But that's a good point. I want to elaborate on that. So the question is whether or not the voltage and the concentration in the back should be the concentration that specifies that voltage, right? Just playing devil's advocate here for a second. So if the voltage here at that interface, at this interface, not that interface, would drop to zero, do you think there would be a voltage higher than zero here? Assuming, of course, it discharges very slowly. Again, you have a voltage here, okay, and a voltage that is different from zero, right? Okay, and I discharge it very slowly. You expect the voltage coming down as you reach all those different plateaus until eventually it reaches your cutoff voltage. Okay, now if you do it at a, let's just say, a relatively high C rate, okay, then this point you should expect to have a higher concentration than that one. Okay, and besides the voltage losses, right, if I ignore that and I just measure my voltage here with respect to here, what should I measure? What voltage should I measure? What contribution should that be? From the material? Again, I'm trying to measure a voltage from this point with respect to that point.
So it should be the difference between the highest and lowest voltage on here.
That's a trick, right? That if it were that voltage, okay, then you would be already contradicting how you measure that voltage. If you remember, well, there were a set of assumptions here for this voltage, right? We were saying that this voltage, really this equilibrium potential, was a voltage measured between the material and some reference. In this case, we arbitrarily said that that reference was the lithium reference. So if I measure this voltage, not with respect to lithium, but with respect to this point, what voltage should that be? We're discharging now, right? So there's a current coming here, right? There are electrons coming here. They're just coming as fast as they can so that they can react with the lithium coming in here so that lithium finally diffuses in. What would the voltage difference here, considering that there's a flux of electrons? If there were no gradients, if this were done at a very, very small current, I measure the voltage here and the voltage here, and the voltage difference should be zero. Okay? I would only have the material potential. But if I measure also for very, very small currents, the voltage here with respect to lithium, it will be 4 point something. Right? And also I measure it here, it will be something close to 4 point something. It won't be 4 point something for an intermediate current. So what controls that difference? And you have it already here. Dungeon? The what? You think there's that diffusion has a contribution here? Diffusion in here is neutral. So this is just, there's no, as diffusion moves here, it's just a simple diffusion problem. There's no ionic contribution from lithium itself. The only charges that you have here are the electrons. Yeah. Right, exactly. The drop here between this point and that point should be the resistance. So if I measure the voltage with respect to this point, okay, the voltage here will just be the ohmic losses only. Okay? So what should the voltage be here with respect to lithium? What? The concentration of the separator. No, I'm talking right inside, right? I'm epsilon inside the surface, right? Let's just say I'm a layer of, say, I don't know, 100 atoms inside the active material. Okay, right there. That voltage with respect to lithium. What? Right, that should be the equilibrium potential over here, right? Then I have to subtract these losses. So really, this potential over here should be the concentration at the surface, right? And that's what I put here, H sub C, for being at the surface, right at the surface. If I measure the concentration in the back with respect to lithium, I would get a voltage too with respect to lithium, okay? But I will have to correct for these losses. Okay, because those losses are happening. So at this point, no losses have occurred yet. Okay, this just, I have to account for those losses as they go through the system, right? So that, and of course, since lithium is piling up, as time progresses, then that should be a function of time, right? And how is that occurring as a function of time? Well, you can calculate it from here, right? You have the time dependence there, and then you would have only to substitute for x equals hc. So this term simplifies, and then you would have to account for that entire sum. Okay? But this concentration at the surface will be non-zero. Okay? Will be the concentration of what has piled up right inside. Okay? Presumably the diffusivity in the separator is so high that I don't have to account for these steep gradients, but I always have a constant supply of lithium, so I don't have to worry of what happens there. Okay? Now, what should be the potential on the, right at the surface, the contribution from the anode? What should be the contribution of the anode by itself? Obviously, it should be a function of time. Okay? And we have the solution up there. Where should I measure that voltage to for the anode? You agree with me that if I made this anode, if I measure it here, okay, and as compared to measuring it here, if I make this distance smaller and smaller, the voltage difference would be at some point so small that I will only have the contribution of the interface by itself. Right? So it should be the contribution of the interface, right? Or for the concentration right inside the anode. Okay? So I take my solutions, right? If you have your potentials as a function of concentration, now you have the concentrations as a function of space and time, you put them in here, and you get the voltage at the interface, the equilibrium voltage at the interface at every instant, given what your reaction, interfacial boundary condition is, right? Given what that flux is, okay? Obviously, higher C rates will pile up more lithium in the cathode and will deplete more lithium in the anode. When will it stop? Because here, you can see stuff keeps piling up and piling up. When will it stop? What? Saturated into what number? Yes, it will be saturated until it reaches the solubility limit. Right, and then we're here on the cathode. Right, basically, we'll keep piling up until there are no more vacancies for that lithium to be stored right at the surface, and then the reaction should stop, right? Because It's equivalent of trying to go, I don't know, to the movies, right, on opening night, right, and then you arrive too late, there are no tickets, right, you can't come in, okay? The same here, when will I be depleting this electrode, until when? Until I empty the theater, right, until this will keep coming down, until I reach zero. Okay. In both cases, that you can see the diffusion limitations are an issue, because in this case, when that reaches the solubility limit, back here, I have this much material that I did not use. And back here, you can see I reached the solubility, the zero concentration, I will have this much that I didn't use. Okay? Diffusion does matter. When we've been ignoring it until now, because I wanted you to account for all the individual losses. So now that we have these contributions, knowing what the diffusivities, the diffusion limitations are, what the concentration profiles are, okay, inside the particles, then we can subtract for all the losses. Okay. I think you know the losses. Can you tell me the losses? Give me a loss here.
Ohmic loss from the anode.
Which in this case, and you're absolutely right, a reaction occurs here, okay, which means that lithium dissociates into lithium ion and an electron. You expect the lithium ion to cross the separator and the electron to travel back, right? So, and be collected here, which means that given the thickness of the anode and the conductivity of the anode material, okay, there's going to be a loss because of that. Okay, it's going to be a voltage drop because as compared to the porous battery where it travels always through the matrix of the particles of the active material, in this case it actually has to cross that particle. Okay, it has to cross the thin film. Okay? There are two more losses. Another loss. Right, obviously the cathode, yes. You have the cathode, the current density, and the conductivity of the cathode. So the solid cathode. No porosity contributions in this case. It's all dependent, as you can see, of the thickness. Okay? We still need one more. Lithium ions still have to cross the separator. Okay? So these over here, case of A and case of C, these are, in this case, these are electronic conductivities, which are different than ionic conductivities, right? And in this case, when we refer to electrons, these are electrons actually scattering around the lattice, okay? In this case, the crystal lattice. Okay, in the separator, we have these really big fat ions, you know, just diffusing from one defect to the other one, right? They're much bigger, right? You can see you have an electron, right? And you have a giant lithium ion, right? Those still have to jump from one spot to the next. So this conductivity will probably be much lower. I'm talking about the conductivity, not the diffusivity. Okay. And that's it. There are some idealities we're not including here. For example, you should expect the ionic conductivity of lithium in the separator to be concentration dependent. Okay? Also, the separator itself has a solubility limit too. Okay? If you dump lithium into the electrolyte really fast and you basically fill all the vacancies in the electrolyte, then you can also cause some problems, right? You can basically stop diffusion because let's just say if you do it, you see how a pulse of current, right? You can just pulse it so fast, okay, that basically I cannot receive anymore because I have reached all the possible spots available to accommodate the lithium that you're giving to me, right? And they will stop too, right? This one also has its solubility limit, separator, CT of the anode, right? Each of them have their own solubility limit. And when you reach the solubility limit, just like in the cathode and the anode, you can also have your own further phase transition, right? You could have, say, in this case, a precipitation of salt, right? The salt that dissolves the lithium could actually, because you have reached the solubility limit, right? Just like when you put too much sugar in your coffee, right? You should expect that thing to go
and to start dropping, right? And that is also something that will be an issue here too. Okay. Another thing that we're not including with this model, okay, is the fact that the voltage potentials and the conductivity are also a function of temperature, right? To this point, we're assuming that all the losses that occurs in the system are due to are occurring at ISO at a constant temperature, which means that if there's any heat generated anywhere in the cell, it's removed really fast from the system. In a real system, these layers are not only electrically insulating, they also have a low conductivity, thermal conductivity, so you should expect also this thing to start cranking up temperature. Just like, I'm sure you've seen your batteries heat up, right? So you, that is also something we're not including here. We're not including the Joule heating on the system. But you should expect, right, that you have a really thick battery, a really thick cathode, the losses that occur there, the voltage losses translate into heat losses, and you will start, of course, generating more Joule heating that is being released to the surroundings. Okay? So, again, and of course, you still have the fact that we're assuming that the reaction occurring at the interface, okay, is not limiting, which is not true. Okay? In general, it's not true. In general, we have to resolve this reaction. There's a reaction occurring at this interface and a reaction occurring at this interface, and we're completely not including it in the system. Okay? That's the next layer of complexity. Okay? We will dedicate a class just to talk about what happens at that very, very small regions. And there's like 5-10 nanometers of space. There's all sorts of things. That's the heart of the battery. Okay, we have to account for that. For that, the reaction itself, lithium converting into lithium plus and E minus, right? We're right now ignoring those details. Okay, those should be included too. Okay? But given those constraints, this description, I hope you can agree with me that it's better than that description over there. Okay? Especially for thin film. The slide that I have here shows exactly what we just discussed, right? You have an anode, a separator, and a cathode. Okay? And there you have, that's the mass that it's leaving the system. So mathematically, I should point out that if you're using this model to describe thin film diffusion, okay, you should account for that minus sign. Okay? And I should also point out another limitation of this model is that you expect the current density at the interface to be a constant. Okay? If you have a diffusion that it's a modulated by, if you have a function, let's put it, not a constant, then this model would probably break, okay? And whatever mass here is being lost is entering on this side, okay? And, well, this is just a sketch to show you that the moment you turn it on, right, you should have some depletion there and a very, almost a flat gradient in concentration, right? And whatever is taken out, it's entering the other side, okay? And after time passes, right, stuff accumulates on the cathode until you reach the solubility limit, right? And at that point, the reaction should stop. In fact, you should say that this function and these functions over here, both functions, go to U of C equals CT, okay, when you reach the solubility limit, right? Above that, it should just stay there, right? Or in the, at that point, right, whatever fit you have, if you have only, if this function that you have only applies within the bounds of zero to the solubility limit, then this description of the voltage would fail to describe what's occurring in the system, okay? Okay. And of course, then you have to account for the losses, the ohmic losses in the cathode, the ohmic losses in the anode, and the ionic losses in the separator. Yes, you have a question.
There seems to be a discontinuity in the concentration.
Does that yes. Be very high in the no. So yes, there is a discontinuity in the concentration, but you have to keep in mind, remember we had this, discussion about this, in anticipation of this, and in this case, keep in mind that when a battery is completely discharged or completely charged, right, you expect
that the not the chemical potentials, but the electrochemical potentials to be flat across. So when the battery is completely discharged, even though you will have, well, in this case, a voltage difference zero across both ends, right? If you really fully let it to go all the way to the end, everything happens, right? You don't, basically, you don't stop it at the cutoff voltage. You just let it go until it's completely done. Okay? Then, what you will get is that you will have a very high concentration here, a very low concentration down there, okay, and some intermediate concentration in between. What you care about is that the electrochemical potential will be flat across. Okay, so energetically, it wouldn't be an issue, okay? The free energy is still always coming down as the discharge proceeds, okay? The chemical potential, in this case, you could have it so that, for example, this one has that value, and that one has that value, okay? But if the voltage difference is such that they compensate each other like that, okay, as long as the overall electrochemical potential is flat across the board, that's all that matters.
If you have a sudden jump in concentration, mm-hmm. doesn't that also mean that you're going to have very high electric fields at that point? You just saw Poisson, but this would mean that you have dipoles at that point.
Right, yes. Yes. So what you're saying is, whether or not, right at the interface, you could have a strong charge localization in the system. Yes, you would have you would have that is there for sure, right? You could have a the bilayer or a Helmholtz layer that has to be compensated electrically across the system. Yeah, that should be there. That would be jumping ahead on what's occurring right at the interface. But by the same token, right, you should expect if you have an ionic solid like a ceramic, right, you have positive charges and negative charges very, very close to each other, right? Which also will induce very high local electric fields if you want to compute those. So let's just say it doesn't take my sleep away, right? I think in that sense the energetics work out really well, right? And everything it's well accounted for. Okay. Those are those contributions, right? And, well, the voltage you have to account in this case for all the losses, right? Which the solution that you see here is the same solution that we just wrote on the board. Okay, accounting for, in this case, all the losses. Okay? Now, I show you the solutions for a thin film and a platelet. Okay? There are other approximations you have here. If you care when you're discharging a battery, you want to know how much charge you can put in. In many cases, you don't even care if it's accumulating lithium on the surface or whatever other reactant you're running your battery with. What you care about is how much charge I can shuttle from the anode to the cathode. And that actually is very straightforward, right? Why? Because, well, you know already how many ions are being put in. Okay? So if you know that, well, knowing that charge flux is nothing else but charge per unit area per second, you can very easily calculate what that charge is. Okay, and I'm just putting up the relationship there, right? I think it's very straightforward to deduce. Obviously, should be twice as much in a platelet because you're putting in this case charge from both sides, not just from one side. Okay, which you should account for as well. Okay, what is useful, and I got that from a simple diffusion book in this case I got it from Crank. That the concentration at the surface, okay, if you discharge it very fast, okay, let's just say transients only dominate, let's just say if the back of the electrode never sees any concentration changes, the concentration is going to be whatever the initial concentration was at the surface times the current density, times time to the 1/2, the diffusivity to the 1/2. Okay, and I want to make a small table of that. Let's see, I'm going to do it over here. here, here, say, say, platelet or thin film, and say that the charge, accumulated charge, or depleted charge is going to be Q equals J naught times A times T, or T could be the discharge time, or Q equals 2 J naught times A times T, and a surface concentration gotta put it here as delta C equals, or no, just put it right, C equals C naught plus 2 J naught over F times pi, times T times pi times D to the 1/2. Okay, why do we care about that number? Because if you discharge it really fast, okay, you, all you will care about is the concentration at the interface. Okay, you won't even care how thick the electrode is. But if you just basically plate the anode, right, basically lithium comes really fast and you read the solubility limit on the first hit, okay, that's how much lithium you would have put in. And then, therefore, just gonna put here on the side, your voltage at, of the electrode is going to be given for short times, right, and I should say here, short times. Okay, that solution. Okay? So you could actually compute the large, quote unquote, complicated model that you saw on the previous slide, or you can just type that in. Okay, for short times. Or you prefer short times, it's also equivalent to saying high C rates. Or if you prefer pulses, right? Let's just say the battery, you have managed to have a lithium-ion battery as a starter for your car, right? So you're just turning it on, right? You gotta get a large pulse of current, which means large amounts of lithium being intercalated there. That's the concentration. You know how much the voltage is. You can estimate what is the drops across every single part of the system by accounting for all the losses, right? All the ohmic losses. Okay? That's for a platelet or a thin film. Okay? And, well, there's a reason for this, right? There's gonna be a homework soon, right? For a cylindrical structure. Okay? For a cylindrical structure, the solution to the problem is very similar. Okay? You also have a linear contribution in time. Okay? As we had before, a quadratic contribution for the thickness, right? In this case, for the radius. Okay? And an infinite sum. But as compared to before, let me go two slides back. No. There. As compared to before, where we have the cosine and an exponential, now, in comparison, I'm gonna go back there. Now we have, well, we still have the exponential contribution, but this J function here, that is not a current, okay? That function is the cylindrical basal, the zeroth Bessel function, okay? And what alpha n corresponds to the roots of that Bessel function, right? The Bessel functions, think of it as the solution to the wave equation, but in cylindrical coordinates. So that function looks something like this, right? If you, in this case, you have something that goes and does that. Actually, it's zero, so no, I think that's fine. So it does something like that. Okay, the alpha n's corresponds to these roots. Okay, you cannot calculate those analytically. People have calculated, approximated, you have huge tables of that. Computers have huge built-in tables to calculate that. Okay, and that's already been very well said, very well established. In the paper that I posted regarding the diffusion in battery materials, you have tables of alpha n if you needed to compute them. Okay, and, well, I never have to go more than 100 terms, okay, and, well, in this case, you have the whole discussion, right, this case, the charge for a, well, let's put here for a cylinder, or you know, you're being more practical than an academic cylinder. Think of it of, you have a fiber, right? You have a battery made out of fibers, right? Where, say, material, right? The active material, the reactant is coming through the surfaces. In this case, the charge is going to be given by, well, shouldn't be surprising, this is 2 pi r, where rc is the radius of the, of your fiber, times the length of the fiber, right? Very long fibers will accumulate more, right? Times the time that you have spent discharging. Okay? In this case, you can see it's, you control the aspect ratio. In the other case, you have to make it very, very, very wide areas to make it work. Okay? And in this case, for short solutions, right, for instead of, if you don't want to use that entire formula that you see up there, okay, in this case, you can use this other one, right, which you can say C equals C naught plus 2J over F T over D to the 1/2. Where J is the current density, okay? Notice that in the first one I have a pi, and in this case I have a 1, okay? So there's a difference between trying to discharge into a platelet or a film and to discharge in a fiber, okay? Now, here's the next one. You also have, and this is the one that people spend the most time on, which is spherical particles. Why? Because, well, to a first approximation, our porous electrodes are nothing else but spherical particles. Okay, although we know better, right, we know they're much more complex than that, but to a first approximation, you can think that these objects are particles. So you can say here, spheres, particle. Well, shouldn't be surprising that the total charge that comes in per unit second or given a certain amount of time is going to be the area of the platelet, I'm sorry, of the particle, pi r squared times, in this case, the time that you spend discharging in or discharging out. And of course, I've missed that, right? There should be a current here in both of them. Okay? So there's a current in both of them. And there's also a solution that you can use. Okay? You can see it here as compared to before where you had cosines or you had Bessel functions. In this case, you have a sine function where alpha n are also roots to the solution. Okay? And it's also an infinite sum, right? But, again, if you are not interested on the overall discharge process, you are interested on high C rates or pulses, right, where you actually never reach the core of these particles or these geometrical features, then the concentration is going to have a similar mathematical form. And that turns out to be important. If you are interested in a high power application, what geometry would you pick? The film? Just for geometrical, you know, assuming everything's the same. Assuming they're all are discharging at the same current, they're all start from the same initial concentration, they all have the same diffusivity. And you are in a lab where basically you push a button and you say, today I want cylinders, or today I want spheres. Okay? Yes? Spheres. Yes, why the spheres?
Because for the short time approximation, the radius.
Right, exactly. For high C rates, I'm putting in more. Okay? That's also bad too. You think about it. That means I'm also accumulating more on the surface at the beginning. Okay? I can definitely put in more. No doubt. Okay? In fact, you can recalculate how much charge you have by referring C relating that to the amount of charge, right? The number of moles to the actual charge that has gone in. Right? Do you see that? So, how much is it? And you guys have a calculator there. How much is that number? How much is 2 over pi to the 1/2, which would be the pre-factor as compared to here, which is 2, and here where it's 3? How much is, do you have that? Someone has a calculator?
Is 1.13.
So it's
basically within 10%, right, that number is 1. Okay, so yes, you do get much more with particles. So, and why do you get much more with particles? What's special geometrically particles with respect to plates or with respect to fibers? Why do I get 3 times more? Yeah. Right. You can think of, exactly, you have more surface area, right? In a platelet, you're basically, are you only putting it in one dimension, right? And in a cylinder, you're get basically anything within the plane, right? The radius of the thing. And in this case, in a sphere, it all comes in 3 dimensions, right? It's all coming in all directions. Okay? So that makes a big difference. So you can put more. Okay? That gives you more power, more stuff to put in, and also more accumulated material at the surface, which may play a role later on other issues like degradation. Okay? So maybe you don't want to go the whole way, right? Maybe you want to do cylinders because maybe your battery is going to last longer. Okay? Making decisions of what you want your battery to do. You want your battery to last longer. You want your battery to have high power. Okay? Or maybe you want to have both, right? And then in case you have to play the game. Okay, as to what is the best way to do it. Okay? And let's see, do I still have time? Yes. Okay. Now, these are some typical values for lithium-ion battery materials. Okay? And this is where things become interesting because then we have to play the game of what is the best geometry, okay? And what is the chemistry that we pick. Okay? I think ideally from the design perspective, what you want is to pick your geometry to basically try to compensate for the diffusion limitations that your chemistry may have, right? And you can see, for example, that, as we were expecting, the electrolyte has diffusivities that go from 10 to the minus 10 to 10 to the minus 11 in that range. Which in comparison with any active material, both cathode and anode, is at least 3 orders of magnitude above it. Okay, so for all practical purposes, the electrolyte is flat, right? Okay, chemically speaking, unless I am indeed at a very high C rate, okay, which actually for the electrolyte, that equation would apply, okay, the concentration gradients are flat, right? Are basically very, very shallow. Okay, it shouldn't be completely flat, right? Because if there's no concentration gradient, there's no flux, there's no battery, right? So you still have a concentration gradient, but it will be very shallow, right, in comparison to the concentration gradients that you would see in particles of different shapes and sizes. You guys, for your projects, have different matching or non-matching chemistries. For example, some of you have lithium manganese oxide and graphite. Notice that even though the diffusivity of graphite is higher, it's really not that higher, right? Based on the numbers that I found in the literature, and again, this was like a 2-minute search, so I really didn't spend that much. There's a factor of 5. It's 5 times better, okay? But if you compare it with the electrolyte, that's still not as good, right? There's still some diffusion limitations there, okay? If you compare lithium manganese oxide with lithium cobalt oxide, I don't know if you can see there's a 2-order of magnitude difference. This is one of the reasons, the fact that lithium cobalt oxide has such a low diffusivity, why people don't want to use it for high power applications. Because if you're discharging really fast, you will, and I should just redraw my cartoon because it's a mess now. Just do it, draw it again. If I have a material that has a very, very low diffusivity, I would have this as compared to something that has a diffusivity much higher. It will still have a gradient, but it'll probably look something like that. Okay? It'll be much better in comparison. Okay? So, and you can see it already from here, right? Notice the difference between having a diffusivity of 10 to the minus 13 versus something that has a diffusivity of 10 to the minus 16, the concentration in the surface will be much higher, even if it's a film. Okay? It will be much higher, right? And by the same token,
you should have much more lithium accumulated in a particle, three times more for low diffusivity. So you do want it for a high power application if your diffusivity is high. If your diffusivity is low, you're only going to be limiting how much lithium you can put in there because you're going to be reaching the solubility limit three times faster at the interface. Okay? So you want that number D to be, you want to engineer the chemistry, if you may, okay, so that the concentration in the particles is as flat as possible as well, if you are aiming for a high power application. Okay? Other interesting comments. Well, lithium iron phosphate is a strange case because individual phases, you can see diffusivities go from 10 to the minus 14 to 10 to the minus 20. Diffusivity is very low. Okay? But lithium iron phosphate is not driven by diffusion really when you are trying to put material in it. Really what happens is that in lithium iron phosphate you have phase transformations going on that actually occur much faster than what you would expect, right? So the lithiated phase has a very low diffusivity, but the unlithiated phase, which may have a very high diffusivity, actually is much easier to use as an active material, and that's why lithium iron phosphate is used for high power application. Okay? But you have to include the possibility of a phase transformation occurring in the system, which in this case is not trivial given the tools that we have to this point. Okay? Anyway, you can see that, then it becomes all these advantages and drawbacks, right, based on the choices that you make. Okay? And let's see, how much time do I have? Oh, I am done. I'm gonna be posting a homework. Okay, most likely on Thursday. Okay, and notice that if you have spherical particles, you have your anode made out of spherical particles and your cathode made out of spherical particles, you have, in this case, your goal, right, becomes on matching the geometries to match the capacities. Okay? Remember we had this capacity ratio? Remember that? Now, in your capacity ratio, now you actually have to account also for diffusion. Okay? Because now your capacity ratio, Let me try to sketch it here. If you have, let's just say, have a very tiny spherical particle of graphite against a very large particle of, say, lithium manganese oxide. Okay? Even though the capacity, R, the theoretical capacity of this particle with respect to that particle could be matched in thickness. In this case, the moment you account for the diffusion limitations, that number will not work anymore. Why? Because in this particle, you will have these gradients. So if you have a particle, say, that is not that size, but say is this size, man, it doesn't matter that I'm over, that I have a much larger capacity there that I can actually put in that particle. I will only be able to plate the surfaces. I'm sorry, not plate, lithiate the surfaces, making this whole section basically dead weight in your battery. Okay? So the questions for you would be, how do I engineer the particle size so that as lithium goes from the anode to the particle, the active material is efficiently used given a specified discharge rate or a specified charge rate? Okay, you should not expect, as you can see from this description, that you will always be able to lithiate the whole particle in its entirety, but that's going to be limited by diffusion. Okay, so based on that, you shouldn't have the same particles having the exact same size. Some of the particles, because they have a lower capacity, you'll probably have to make them bigger. But if you make them too big, it won't matter because you won't be able to use that. So there's a window of particle sizes given your application that you have to aim for. Okay? And that's for when you have, let's just say, particles of graphite and particles of lithium manganese oxide. Okay? What if you have instead fibers of, say, lithium manganese oxide and particles of graphite? That completely changes the game again. Right? Because now your capacity has changed again. The diffusion limitations have just been altered. Or if I just switch it, right, I have graphite fibers, which we know that can be made, right, and lithium manganese oxide spherical particles. That also changes the game as well. Or better yet, you say, oh, well, I'm just going to be very fancy and then just have a fully fiber-powered battery in my system. What would be, how would you match the dimensions of each of the phases
so that when you put them together, you maximize the capacity, you maximize the power density without limiting the energy density of the system. Okay, that is the name of the game, and that's the next homework in this case, okay? And basically what you have there is the homework, okay? Of course, in this case, I'm going to try type it in nicely, and, well, I think I'm over my time, so I'm going to stop right here, and see you guys on Thursday. Thank you.